glad to have Charles. We're sad to learn he's actually, we're going to lose him today rather than tomorrow.
Next time. This is about the efficiency of magnetized spin accretion disks in the Kerr metric, or how to rearrange the deck chairs in, inside the last stable orbit. So I'll start out with a brief introduction and motivation. I'll skip the part about why black holes are interesting. And then I'll talk about a model for a magnetized inflow inside the last stable orbit, solutions of the model, and finally wind up with some implications.
Homework?
You have to invent your own homework. So here are some of the motivating questions behind this work. First of all, what is the structure of a magnetized accretion flow inside the marginally stable orbit? Most of the studies that have been done to date assume it's a pure, it's a hydrodynamic flow or a hydrodynamic flow with viscosity. Second, what is the inner boundary condition on the accretion disk? Is it the no torque boundary condition? The traditional inner boundary condition for an accretion disk is that the disk ends at the marginally stable orbit. The surface density goes to zero here. The surface brightness goes to zero. Then material sort of falls over that just at the last stable orbit and moves more or less on geodesics into the black hole. And this boundary condition leads to the classical estimate for the accretion efficiency, which is just 1 minus the energy of a particle on the last stable orbit, the so-called energy at infinity over c squared, and energy per unit mass. And this is, of course, for a non-rotating black hole, it's 0.057, and for a maximally rotating black hole, it's 0.42. And accompanying this no-torque boundary condition is the usual estimate for the angular momentum flux onto the hole, which is just the angular momentum of a particle at the last stable orbit multiplied by the mass flux. This is the sort of the rest mass flux. I'll define that more carefully later. So what if magnetic forces are important inside the marginally stable orbit? That's the question which drove this. And another question or factor which drives this is that we know that there are global numerical models which are now being run by John Hawley and Jim Stone, and we'd like to sort of try and anticipate what they're going to show. So here's the cartoon. Sorry. Yeah. This is sort of the one area where we actually get to do experiments and in astrophysics. So here's a cartoon model. This is the color picture that appears inside my head when I think of accretion flows around black holes. It's a reality question mark. A thin disk. Of course, there are all sorts of problems associated with the structure of that thin disk, but I'll leave that aside for the moment. The blue represents field lines emerging from the disk, maybe some of them closed, going back onto the disk. I should credit Blanford and Payne for that, you know, pieces of that. And then some of the field lines go away to infinity. Some of the field lines in here near the marginally stable orbit may go in through the event horizon. And then down near the equator, there be a rather combed out flow of the magnetic field into the event horizon. So this is the event horizon here. This dashed line is the boundary of the ergosphere for a rapidly rotating hole. So we can idealize this into a calculable model. And the model that I'm going to describe is one in which the disk ends suddenly at the marginally stable orbit. And then we imagine that just on the inner surface of the disk, there's a more or less radial field stretching out, pointing inward or outward from the black hole. And these field lines have no theta component. They're perfectly radial in the colloidal plane. There may be an azimuthal component, and there's no vertical motion, no deviation of the fluid from flow exactly along the field lines. So and I'll be more specific about what that means in a moment. But this is I'm going to assume that things have reached a steady state here. I'm also going to assume that the flow is cold in the sense that the sound speed divided by the speed of light is much less than one. I'm going to assume that the magnetic field has sort of a monopolar geometry, so that and we can repair that to preserve the no monopole constraint by dividing the field into sectors, either in azimuth or vertically through the disk. So field lines might go in from 0 to 180 degrees in azimuth and out from 180 to 360 degrees. So this, for those who are familiar with solar wind models, there's an old Weber-Davis model for the solar wind. This is sort of the Weber-Davis model turned inside out. So it's, as Roger pointed out, the Davis-Weber model for the inflow. So now I'll give a more precise description of the model. This follows work. Essentially, this whole model, except for the boundary conditions, was first calculated by Takahashi et al. In a 1990 paper. But Takahashi's work follows earlier work by Kamenzind, and as was pointed out to me yesterday by Finney. I'll say more about which parts here are new later on. So I'll work in Bohr-Lindquist coordinates, then I'll set the gravitational radius and the speed of light equal to 1. So we'll assume certain symmetries here. I think I've left out some of the most important symmetries, but I'll get to in a minute. First of all, U theta in Bohr-Lindquist coordinates is 0, so there are no vertical, so-called vertical velocities. We'll set the R phi component of the field tensor, the electromagnetic field tensor, equal to 0. And for those of you who didn't learn your E&M from MTW, FR phi reduces in the Newtonian limit to R sine theta B theta. So there's no vertical field. We'll also assume that the flow is symmetric about the equator, and only consider flow that's very, very close to the equator. And the symmetry I left out was that, del t is 0, so it's a steady state, and del phi is 0, so it's axisymmetric. We'll assume ideal MHD, so that means that the contraction of the forward velocity with the electromagnetic field tensor is 0. Put differently, the electric field in a frame co-moving with the fluid is 0. And finally, or not finally, one can use these symmetries to reduce Maxwell's equations to a very simple form. They reduce to the radial derivative of this F theta phi component of the magnetic field being 0. This is equivalent to the Newtonian statement that del dot B is 0. F theta phi reduces to R squared BR sine theta, or at the equator, just R squared BR. So that flux is conserved. The remaining component of Maxwell's equations is del r of this other component, ft theta is 0. Ft theta reduces to, again, Newtonian limit, the minus r e sub theta. And from that, one can create a constant of motion, omega sub f, which is the rotation frequency of the field lines that Roger talked about this morning. We also have particle number conservation. I'll assume particle number conservation so that reduces to this expression, which is very much like the Newtonian expression 2 pi r squared rho times the radial forward velocity is a constant. This mass flux is not an accretion rate, it's a mass flux per unit theta. So I'm doing everything, all these fluxes per unit theta. We also have the equations of motion extracted from T mu semicolon nu is zero. But rather than starting from here, you can use the symmetries of the problem to find a conserved angular momentum flux. That's just 2 pi r squared times the phi r component of the stress tensor. In relativistic form, that reduces to this. This is the material component of the angular momentum flux. That's the bulk advection of material with finite angular momentum into the black hole. And this is the electromagnetic component. Here, this squiggly d is the thing that goes to 1 as r goes to infinity and 0 at the horizon. It's 1 minus 2 on r plus a squared on r squared. This whole function reduces in the non-relativistic limit to this. This is the usual Reynolds stress, and this is the usual Maxwell stress. And in a similar fashion, one can extract a conserved energy flux in the flow. And that, in the Newtonian limit, has one term, which is the sort of rest mass energy density contribution to the energy flux. Another term, which is the kinetic energy contribution, the potential energy, and then this is just the usual Poynting flux in the MHD approximation. And finally, normalization of forward velocity. So then we're left with the question of what are the appropriate boundary conditions for this model? Well, first of all, there are internal boundary conditions in the flow due to the critical points. There's a fast point condition. The flow has to pass smoothly through the fast point. The point is more or less done away with by the fact that we've taken the limit of the temperature going to zero. You can also do this for finite temperature solutions, but things don't change very much at all. And finally, the alpha endpoint. In this case, there's a degeneracy in the alpha endpoint that doesn't provide an additional constraint on the flow.
Why is that?
In general, that's a complicated question. In this particular case, I believe that because of the symmetries and the fact that we've set u theta to be identically zero, you've eliminated the alpha mode. So
it's the weather day in this case. When you are the
I'm going to say the weather day, but I understand. Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. Do we have to impose boundary conditions at the event horizon? It turns out we don't. There's the event horizon is inside the fast point, so it's causally disconnected from the rest of the flow. Finally, and more significantly, we need to attach boundary conditions at the inflow disk interface. And the natural boundary conditions are that the mass flux, the angular momentum flux, and the energy flux should be continuous at that interface. So you can write down more general mass angular momentum and energy flux than the one I wrote down in the last view graph, which includes the usual bulk matter terms here and here, and the electromagnetic terms here, and in addition a viscous term, which is essentially a turbulent term for the transport in the disk. This is the wind piece, which turns off when you're inside the disk, and this is the viscous piece, which turns off when you're outside the disk. So we need to match everything up. Well, one can show that the electromagnetic component of the energy flux is related to the electromagnetic component of the angular momentum flux by the rotation factor, which is the rotation frequency of the magnetic field. And similarly, in the disk, the components are related by the rotation frequency of material in the disk. So all the fluxes are continuous at this interface between the wind and the disk. If we set the mass flux in the disk equal to the mass flux in the inflow, and the rotation frequency of the field equal to the rotation frequency of material on GD6 at the last stable orbit. And finally, we need to set the viscous stress in the disk equal to the electromagnetic stress at the marginally stable orbit.
This is sort of unrelated to your mathematical development, but it just suddenly struck me. You said that none of this changes when you do include a finite temperature flow and therefore you do have a slow point in the flow.
The boundary conditions are much more complicated in that case.
But nothing physical will change in the solution.
No. They approach one another.
And right now, the slope point is at infinity, right?
No, the slope point is at the so the stuff is the material is.
There's no radial velocity.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So once we set this boundary conditions, we don't need a fancy numerical simulation to solve the model. We don't even need calculus. We can just solve a set of algebraic relations for the flow. Yeah. Before going on, I should contrast this to the usual no-torque boundary condition, which is that the viscous stress vanishes at the marginally stable orbit. And that leads to the usual surface brightness profile, which is proportional to this factor 1 minus r on r MSO to the 1/2. This is a Newtonian model. You can do this in the relativistic case as well, but we'll just I'll use this as a representative solution. Actually, Eric Engel and Julian Krolik have worked at the relativistic case. I understand. This is the surface brightness profile in the no torque case. Once you introduce finite torque at the inner boundary of the disk, then this factor here gets multiplied by factor beta less than 1, and that leads to a surface brightness profile which doesn't tail off so strongly at the inner boundary. The surface brightness has some finite value at the inner boundary of the disk. So here's a sample solution for the inflow. Yeah, all those factors of 1 minus everywhere that factor appears in every element of the usual thin disk solution. Yeah. So this is a sample solution for a non-rotating black hole. This has A equal to 0, and I set the one remaining parameter of the flow, which is this radial magnetic flux, F theta phi equal to 4. And I'll talk in just a moment about what sort of reasonable values for F theta phi is. So the flow has zero radial velocity here, marginally stable orbit at 6 m over c squared, rapidly up here through fast point, and then into the event horizon. I think I'll just leave it at that. So one important aspect of this is that the eigenvalue that emerges from the solution is the energy flux, which in this case is minus 0.84. So if you take 1 minus the energy flux in the normalization that I'm using, 1 plus the energy flux, you obtain the efficiency for the inflow. And in this case, it's 0.16, which should be contrasted with the usual estimate for a non-rotating hole of 0.057. So it's a significantly more efficient accretion flow by a factor of 3. So one can also look at more rapidly rotating solutions. And more strongly magnetized solutions. This particular one has this radial flux function set to, or parameter set to 8. The rotation parameter is 0.9. In this case, the marginally stable orbit is here, near OR of 2.3. And then the material accelerates in through the ergosphere. Again, this is the radial velocity. And then through the fast point, which sits, in this case, just outside the horizon. And for this guy, the energy flux is positive, so energy is being extracted from the black hole. So the efficiency is larger than unity, 1.24.
In a sense, it is an anti-black hole because you're wasting the energy, but the gravitational energy to dissipate it in the body this, and you don't produce outflow.
I don't know if I would label it that way, but yeah. So the energy, ultimately, the energy emerges in the disk. Yeah.
So instead of making jets, making UV.
Yeah.
You can't get it twice.
Yeah.
Well, if one goes back to that cartoon that I showed at the beginning, there may also be field lines that come up from the disk and go at high latitude.
This is spinning the hole down. If you'd left this run for a very long time, the black hole.
I'll get to that. Yeah. So the other eigenvalue that comes out of this is the angular momentum flux, and in this case, it's outward as well. So this panel over here shows the electromagnetic component of the energy flux and the matter component of the energy flux. So the matter component is still negative, so materials being delivered to the black hole on positive energy, negative energy orbits. But the electromagnetic field energy flux overwhelms that.
Energy is not extracted from the pulley because the light bulb has fallen.
As the deck chairs fall into the... Yes, no.
I'm confused about the negative energy orbit, sorry.
Did I get the sign on that wrong? I think they're bound. They have negative energy at infinity.
But relative to what? Relative to... I mean, qualitating... Does it include the rest mass?
Yes, it's minus UT. Is U sub T is less than zero.
Yeah. But I'm surprised it's all the way out. It's I'm kind of reading it.
This is A of 0.9, so I've forgotten what the efficiency is for that, but the if you calculate minus UT for the last stable orbit and for 0.9, I believe it will come out, let's see, this is 0.567, 72, 73.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So
it's
just ordinary particle orbits,
they're
not the,
and
just making
them,
they have negative
energy. Yeah. You're not using the particles to get the energy out of the hole. You're not putting them on positive. Energy orbits.
So to describe the torque of the inner part of the disk at the marginally stable radius. And that's causing me to think that all of this energy you're talking about, 0.16 and 1.24, would actually be radiated by the disk at traditional radii that is outside R and S. Is that correct? So there's actually none of this energy thing would be radiated inside in the plunging.
Yes.
But it's still
in the model. As to what happens in reality, I mean, the
electromagnetic torque. But that energy is transferred to
the disk. Yeah.
Okay.
So as to what happens in reality, much less clear. I mean, that energy flux may not all be perfectly absorbed by the disk. There may be energy which escapes in other, other ways. Yeah. Everything's purely right. It doesn't have any place else to go. Yeah.
Is down to 9.
Well, that's, yeah, that's, this is a fully...
Well, how does this feel regarding the drain?
Oh, it's not straight. It's purely radial in the poloidal plane, but there's still a phi component to the, and the final panel here shows the sort of rest mass energy density and the electromagnetic energy density measured in a frame co-moving with the fluid. And the electromagnetic energy density exceeds by a factor of several the rest mass energy density once you get to the event horizon.
These beautiful simple numbers like 0.16 obviously don't involve the strength of a magnetic field.
Yes, so there's a parameter here, which is the radial magnetic flux, and that's actually what I'm going to talk about right now. So it's not actually in a moment.
How many times does the field point around
before it gets to the fast point? In Boyer-Lindquist, I'm not sure. I started with the idea of making a plot of what the field lines look like, but then it wasn't clear how to do that in betting. So, but how many times to get to the horizon is maybe, yeah, not. I don't know the answer to that.
You could just do that by integration.
Okay, so you can do a survey of the parameter space, and the parameters are the rotation frequency of the black hole, or the rotation parameter of the black hole, and this f theta phi, which parameterizes the strength of the magnetic field. This plot shows contours of the energy flux, or alternatively, the efficiency of the flow. And I've only looked at prograde rotating solutions.
And you're going to give us a feel for what f theta phi really
means? I am, just after I do this. Okay. So this contour here shows an efficiency of 0.1, that's one of the important contours. This one shows the efficiency of 0.42, which is the classical efficiency for a maximally rotating hole. And it may not be obvious from this plot, because getting these solutions becomes increasingly difficult as you go in towards A of 1. But this actually does go down quite steeply towards the unmagnetized solution, and as far as I'm able to tell, meets at A of 1 and f theta phi of 0. This contour right here shows unit efficiency or energy flux of 0. So to the right and above that line is where energy is extracted from the black hole. So you need a strong field or a rapidly rotating hole. And I should say that I've sort of pushed things and see how large an efficiency I can get. If you sort of head up in this direction in parameter space, you can find solutions with efficiencies as large as 6.
And that's just as far as you've been able to push.
That's right. Yeah, my code failed there.
So essentially, you can spell the whole bit like that.
In principle, I think that's not likely. Those fields are too strong. So what's the astrophysically reasonable value for f theta phi?
It's just a question of how much, how much does epsilon depend on the assumption on the fluxes?
The assumption on the fluxes?
How much, what are the constants of the flow, like fe or
FL and FE are eigenvalues. They come out of the solution for a fixed value of the rotation parameter and the magnetic field strength.
And the mass.
That's normalized out.
I know,
in this case,
so
yeah.
So how much does it depend on how strong is the field?
Yes, so everything depends on how rapidly the hole's rotating and how strong the field is. So that leads to this. what's an astrophysically reasonable value for this parameter? So I'm just going to do a Newtonian estimate here because that should obtain a result which is as accurate as we can hope for. So the ingredients that go into this result are that I'll set the magnetic field equal to some fraction f of the magnetic field in the disk. And then the magnetic field energy density in the disk is of order 2, I've set to be of order 2 alpha times the times the pressure. This is at least consistent with numerical studies of MHD turbulence in disks. And we have the usual formula for the accretion rate, the surface density in terms of the scale height and the density in the disk, the usual formula for the viscosity, Newtonian rotation frequency, and scale height being just CS over omega. So when you combine all these things together, you get that R squared times BR, which is F phi theta in the Newtonian limit, is 2.3 times this F fraction times the disk radius in units of GM over C squared to the 3/4 power. So if we set the disk, the inner radius of the disk at 6, then we get F theta phi of 8.8. So to remind you where that is, in this diagram, 8.8 is actually up at the very top. But it's almost certain that the effective radial field in this inflow is much less, or somewhat less, than the field strength in the disk. 3/4, yeah, I'll put that back up. Yeah, so one becomes increasingly concerned about relativistic corrections as the inner radius of the disk goes towards the event horizon.
But does that mean that this parameter actually decreases as you increase the
spin
of the hole as well?
It may, yeah.
It may, but
yeah.
Better,
yeah, it's not clear, yeah. So what is this F parameter? Is the radial field in the inflow equal to the field in the disk? But we don't know. You could ask, suppose it's just very small, then how does the efficiency change, say, for a non-rotating hole? So you can do that calculation, and for a non-rotating hole, the efficiency starts at 0.057 for a zero-strength field, and then as you increase F theta phi from zero, you get 1% for each unit, in this case, of F theta phi. But in reality, of course, the inflow is going to be very, I suspect, will be very unsteady and turbulent, and there'll be some sort of compromise reached. So, as I said at the beginning, there when I started this calculation, the numerical models were incoming, and now they're here. So, John Hawley has kindly given me just one result. to show from his calculation. So before I show you that result, I'll tell you a little bit about the calculation that he's done. This is a purely Newtonian calculation with a Paczynski-Wieda potential to mock up the effects of GR. There's an inner boundary at a radius that's 1.5 times the radius of the singularity and the potential. And the initial conditions for this model are a torus, a circular cross-section around a black hole. I'm actually not sure at what radius the torus lies initially, but and there are loops of field inside the torus. So the initial conditions are B phi is zero, and then there's loops of field inside the torus. John integrates the equations of ideal MHD in three dimensions. So it's not clear how to define the fast point in a flow when it's not stationary, yeah. But yes. Yeah. Yeah. Although, yeah.
Direct correspondence theorem.
Yes, although he tells me that the radial velocity increases sharply as you cross the marginally stable orbit. So the plot that I was able to get from John shows integrated, I believe this is vertically and azimuthally integrated magnetic stress as a function of radius. And the radius is expressed in units of 2 gm over c squared. So the inner boundary is here at 1.5, and the marginally stable orbit lies at 3. And these different lines show different time slices from the simulation. So the simulation starts with zero magnetic stress, and then the next time is up here where there's a large magnetic stress, and then things gradually settle down over time. But there is no feature in this this magnetic stress at the last stable orbit. So there is a torque in this case on the inner boundary of the disk. Okay, so the conclusion is that this very simplified model suggests that magnetic fields may exert a substantial torque on the disk at the inner boundary, changing the luminosity and the structure of the disk. One thing which I didn't actually talk about, but which relates to a question somebody asked, is that it's more difficult to spin up a black hole when you're accreting under these conditions. And you can find an equilibrium value for the black hole spin for reasonable values of this magnetic flux parameter, reasonable in the context of that estimate. And they turn out to be of order 0.7 rather than 0.998.
Astrophysically related torque in which this number is 1 to match it. It's only when you have, you know, this measurement instead of orbit and you have photons, this is the Kitson number, but it's not general. If you have your kind of torque, is.
Yeah, and if you, in the Thorne paper, there's a quote from the referee on that paper, which is Jim Bardeen, saying that the magnetic fields could provide significant difference from the 0.998. For a large A and a strong field, energy is extracted from the black hole. So this point is actually made in the Takahashi paper. What Takahashi et al. Don't do is tie the injection point for the plasma to the marginally stable orbit. They put it somewhere in between at a different rotation frequency.
But at that point, the minimum value of that for which you get an efficiency that's greater than 1 and was. What for that range of
F or
5 values on that
line? The minimum
value of A.
Yeah, it goes. Yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah, but for that.
I don't know. I don't know what happens off the top of that graph. I don't know where that goes.
No, I know. But you were assuming. Well, we don't know if values of F or 5 that are reasonable.
Yeah. But order unity, it sort of seems reasonable.
But
yeah.
Right. One of the very low contours actually swung back around. I'm curious why that happened.
It's not entirely clear to me. I think it's related to this fact that if you integrate geodesics in the Schwarzschild geometry, for example, and ask what the shear of the geodesics is, it changes sign at 3m, and I suspect that's what's causing that turnaround. But I don't know for sure. That's just speculation. Yeah.
One of the things about the Weber-Davis model, the central deepening in this room has encountered, is that it's a sort of singular case where you have this sort of one of the arc length that field is somewhat misleading about the critical point structure, in the sense that when you change that and allow the field lines to diverge, the quality of the structure is going to change completely. And
because the tension balances the magnetic pressure gradient. So basically, especially in the relativistic literature, you never go through the fast one.
The fast one changes in principle. You allow three lines to diverge, then at that point, you know, it changes in an order unity way. In fact, now you've not quite got the inverse of that because of the relativity terms.
Yeah, we know that it has to go through the fast one for it. I believe
that. Yes, you know. I'm just wondering.
if there may be something slightly apart from the sort of monopole business, there may be something slightly misleading for a somewhat similar reason.
Yeah. As you say, you have to solve the transfield equations ultimately. Actually, it's not clear that you want to go and do a steady state solution in which you solve the transfield equations. You know, that perhaps the next step is doing the time dependent things.
That the operational matter. Uh-huh. You probably want to allow. Have the field lines coming out of the frame like that.
Uh-huh.
Which they will do as they get stronger. They'll bulge in
yes.
the feeder direction.
Yeah.
And also the sort of centrifugal reasons that no matter what we flung out, and as they get flung out, they will also pull them up and make that thing.
Yeah.
Flung in, I mean.
That's not necessarily true. And this was the black hole. It doesn't.
I think so, because it all kind of goes basically the same. I mean,
do you actually think that the radio field lines will actually start bowing out from the upper plane?
Well, they're getting larger, see, and they're.
Yeah.
Even in this monopolar limit. I mean, in the more realistic case where you've got field lines of polarity, the real worry is that you'll get reconnection and you'll have drifts going in rather than a continuous magnetic thread that carries torque outwards from within the microstable orbit through the disk.
A point of debate here has been whether you actually need field lines which are connected to the disk in order to torque the disk at the inner edge. And I think I even may have convinced Arya this yesterday that you don't need field lines going all the way out to the disk, and that by a suitable arrangement of magnetic field loops, you can get substantial torques even without that.
I think that's probably so, right. That's a trivial way.
I had a slightly more realistic model, which was that. You could arrange loops of field in sort of a brick-like fashion like this. You know, obviously this is very crude. And we'll exchange angular momentum with material at the other end of the field lines, and then that happens in each of these little bricks. So if material here is decelerated by tension, then it'll move backwards in its orbit, and it'll bump up against other material, which is being accelerated forward in its orbit, and that's going to create waves in the material, which will propagate in and out waves with amplitude of order unity. Yeah.
But the waves. The waves are going to be small amplitude, and in fact, it's
well, well, I'm not sure that's true actually, because this is magnetically dominated presumably in here, and when you have it's making a large difference in the angular momentum of the material. They're bumping up against each other, and then.
In order to get field from it would be connected to the disk.
The model, the counter model is that there's some kind of drip of magnetic field like this.
Yeah, let me show you.
Maybe it's fair to say that I convinced him about the drift, so you moved to this. So.
No, I mean,
if these are waves, then in principle, don't see any objection to that, but transferring this back to the disk is a whole different issue. Those waves could refract, there's no reason. I mean, there would be reflection, refraction here, there's no. It's not the same picture, that very nice, efficient picture that you're describing now.
Hmm.
And the question is, if you actually assume a little bit like that, so just really, I mean, we want to take, if we want to have this connectivity, we want to have a thin line that's basically been pulled out of the disk and somehow is still anchored inside the disk. So if you do the most,
I did a little toy model, assuming that you pick up a little region like that of the size of B. And the Newtonian system was invoked, that's what I did. assume that it just starts at free fall at some velocity here, dr, which is the positive accretion velocity, nu of the r in the alpha model, and has rho, which is just the infinitesimal, and basically conserve the flux of rho v with the same constant, and b, the first order, because the geometry isn't going to change, also with the same constant. And you ask yourself, suppose I start off the loop with a loop like that, which has a conserved flux b, and I start pulling it in, basically taking the extreme case that the mass is flows in free fall, and as Charles pointed out, go very quickly to the summit point, so pressure effect is not the important. Pressure drops very rapidly since
gas pressure.
Gas pressure drops very rapidly. So you basically just look at the term in the momentum equation as relevant, it's just this rho e g dg, let's say this is z.
Z in your case is R, and
Z
is R.
Rho v dz, v goes down. This is the inertial term. And this basically is constant and you can estimate from what it is. And then you ask yourself, when would it, and kind of intuitively you could ask, I mean, it's not really precise, but when would magnetic field come into play and would actually force you to kind of drift rather than just have a uniform flow, you force it with a drift or with a flow. And basically you say if the field can, if there's a tension here in the field that would increase, if the tension can stop the flow before it basically gets on the scale of order D, that says magnetic fields can arrest the flow and can basically control the flow. So you compare this with this term D squared over 4 pi, the radius of curvature, and the radius of curvature is roughly 2d squared over this z. It's very roughly. So you can show that this magnetic term really increases at z, and this term is inversely proportional to z to the 1/2. So you can find an expression for the equilibrium when these two are equal, and that turns out to be z over d. So it's quite general. Z over D is over D over R. R is the formulation to the 1/3. So that's very naive, but it tells you that if you have scales D that are much smaller than R, then in principle you could stop the flow of magnetic tension before you get to the z is still small compared to d, which means that magnetic tension can become important.
And then you
ask yourself, well, how long will it take? When will it actually burst? You say it will burst basically when you've accumulated enough density here to have this z of order d. And you can estimate simply that this, and that turns out to be of order the dynamical time.
Yeah, I think I believe that magnetic tension is important. But
the R is of course the velocity in the z direction.
That's right.
But one.
Let me see that.
Yeah.
So what I probably always thought is, well, it's not quite clear that there.
Yeah, no, there's.
I mean, I'm more generally conservation of angular momentum is.
Yeah, no, the point is that all this happens on scales in when it's important, of course, if D is of order R, then all those effects come in. But usually I'm looking for scales D. Let's say D is of order the scale height, or it could be bigger, as long as it's still significantly less than R. Then you would be on scales here which are small compared to R. So first of all, if you really have orbits that start moving in, I mean, it, of course, parallel force will be born and also, you know, you'll be twisting the field a bit. But to first order, what really makes the nature of this plunging region different is that you really move very rapidly in.
And
yeah.
So you will maybe in coupled in frame you may wander by radian or two, but not it shouldn't be significant.
I mean, you go far, but not very far.
That's right.
The violation is the axis energy here, of course, keeping that in order to get. I mean, if everything is falling in at the radius of exactly the same speed, then you're not going to.
No, of course. I mean, this is you're absolutely right. This all those effects are important, but I'm just going to. I was just focusing on the two main things: that the tension can stop the main component pretty fast.
You might expect the number of digits to be somewhat of a spectrum of stuff that falls in. Some of it we can actually actually make it all the way in.
Ultimately, it seems, or one input parameter here is the spectrum of turbulence in the disk, and it's not. Not clear what that is.
In John's simulations, how high in practice? Have you started up with a torus?
Do you
have ratios for that? Do you know?
I think it was unity, or at least the width was behind.
The original simulation.
Yeah, it's a circular cross section, but as to what H over R is, I don't know.
Okay, so he's going up to high latitude when he's doing his integral.
I believe so. So there could be substantial transport through that high latitude piece. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Even with a thin disk, the other thing is to say, in terms of communicating stress, you've got a larger area on the surface of the disk than in the height of the thin disk, in the height of the disk, and a larger area of hole to shoot for. Or so those two lines that come out of the disk and go into the hole. Mm-hmm. You know, there's more area there, although the field may be low, there's more area to connect than those field lines that just have a thickness H, which is, you know, which might be small, but it's a thin disk.
Yeah, I guess a counter argument, which I can invent, is that the material that's flowing out in the plane, in the equatorial plane, may drag a substantial component of a strong field out with it.
Numerical simulations will be.
Yeah, the test, yeah.
We'll believe in this.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.